1:30 afternoon session. And we'll first go into supervisor reports of standing and ad hoc reports. Fire committee met yesterday.
She can turn that down, switch it up.
We have a new assistant second in command at CAL FIRE Red Bluff.
That's a little better.
He will be introduced at the first meeting in February when they come in regards to some budget items. We have a report from Bryn Greer and RCD. They have a program of about 25 grants available for open space for 65 and older residents of Tehama County to help clear for defensible space. They've got 25 grants available. We have an update from Dave Russell, Chief Russell, in regards to the fire marshal's move to the courthouse. It's in process. And we have some issues in regards to self-contained breathing apparatus. The state has changed the requirement, and the state is using one device, and we are using another, and they're working through that process. And the city of Red Bluff is going to sell and buy a new ladder truck, and we will no longer be co-owners of the ladder truck that is currently there. The agreement is that when the city determines that the cost to maintain is more than the truck's worth, they have the right to sell it. They are going to sell it, and they have decided to buy a new ladder truck for the city of Red Bluff. So we will be out of the repair business on that ladder truck within the next month or two. And that's all I have from fire. Anybody, do I miss anything, John?
You pretty well covered it.
Very good, thank you. Public Works Committee.
That's not met.
Strategic plan. Has not met. Budget ad hoc?
Nope.
Yeah. Park bond?
No. Do you have anything, David? Is it coming up? No? Okay.
Solid waste has not met. Department ad hoc, departmental review, we have not met. County organization?
Nope.
And workforce development?
Nope.
Very good. Reports of meeting attended. Steve, you didn't go to any?
I didn't do any last week.
Okay, Bob?
The only thing I had was last week I had a meeting of the our Corning Sub-Basin group in regards to the groundwater sustainability plan. We are working through drafting a plan for that basin. We are on chapter 3 right now, and they're doing one chapter at a time for the committees to review it. And then once we're all done, then we'll be brought back to both the Glenn County GSA and through the Tehama County Groundwater Commission, and then through back to the Board of Supervisors for approval.
Very good. Supervisor Carlson?
On the committees?
On the reports of meetings attended.
Okay, so I do have something to report. Both John and I attended the SS TAC meeting on January 7th, 21. And I have a narrative that I wanted to read that was provided by Jessica Garcia Gomez from the meeting. We at SSTAC, the support staff, are excited to announce that the new buses are on their way and already in service. In late December and early January, the transit program received the delivery of 3 new Ford Transit vans for the TRAX program. One of the vans is fitted with luggage racks and is dedicated to the Rancho Tehama Reserve route to accommodate citizens who live in that area. Two trolleys were received, and an additional 22-passenger Laval bus are scheduled for delivery in January. All of the 6 transit vehicles were purchased with federal grant funding and were provided to the county at no cost to the general fund. Additionally, due to the provision of transit, based CARES Act funding, all fares are waived for the duration of the pandemic. And this is really significant because now we can offer free services for the buses. And all these new buses actually are very, very nice for ridership. And we're hoping to increase ridership as well. Finally, the transit facility rehabilitation project is being closed out, and the new facility will be ready for habitation in February. And the entire committee for SSTAC was able to go in and tour the facility, along with what I'm going to tell you, which I'm more excited about than anything I've been saying so far. That the new facility will host a dedicated dispatch office, which will support the TRAX radio safety project and improvements. This project was brought to the board in December, and today, Tehama County TAB staff is hosting the project kickoff meeting. It is anticipated that recommendations for radio improvements be provided by the close of the calendar year. So we were able to ride on the new trolley buses, and want to make a really big deal about it because they're not ready to be on the road yet. The staff is still training on the trolleys, but it was very exciting to be on them. We were able to ride from here. They had them in the parking lot for a little while. We were able to look, you know, inside and outside, and then take the trolleys through town, and even the public was waving at us, and it was a pretty exciting event. And I just have to tell you, it was so exciting to see those trolleys and something that positive happening to our community. Was just wonderful to see. And I want to thank the staff and Jessica and Neve and all of the staff that were involved with getting those trolleys here. And there's more to come on that because they aren't being released to be used by the public just yet. So we're looking at probably March for that. That's it.
Very good. Anything else? Okay, the one I had was on Friday, was an SSB meeting via phone, and as we heard from Val's report this morning, COVID is running rampant in all the counties serviced by Sacsier Valley LIMSA, transportation to various hospitals and so forth is taxing our staff. John, I don't think you had any meetings to attend.
Other than what Tanya shared, and I was really honored to be one of the first ones to ride on the trolley, and I thought for a while I was in San Francisco.
Have the cable car sounds?
Pretty nice, they really are. Beautiful, and the reception that I seen from the public in the Hayward County here on Red Bluff was exceptional. So I think it's going to be a great thing for the city.
Very good. With that, we will move forward to any additional board matters.
Yeah, Dennis, I don't know if you've got the notification, but I did get the notification that we have a new district ranger for the Rhinestone District in Mendocino National Forest.
Yes.
If we could somehow invite the new district ranger to attend a future board meeting, just for introduction, if nothing else.
Can you forward that email?
Actually, he's only going to be there for 120 days.
He's a short-termer, he's a short-termer right now, but he could be...
I'll find it forward to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Additionally, yesterday morning, while Supervisor Carlson and I were in agenda review, the subject of security came up. In light of what's going on in Washington, D.C., and the news media, what's going to happen at all 50 state capitals, if anybody on this board hears of a security issue, please bring it forward so that we can address it with this in this forum or with county council as to what we may have to do if there is some kind of a security breach. And we all have been put on notice of certain things going on in our community. So please keep an ear out. Any other board matter? Seeing none, we will close and move on to our 1:30 agenda item. Item 38, Administration Auditor Controller. purchasing agent Dave Coleman, auditor controller Lori Anderson, board discussion of possible direction to staff regarding proposed purchasing limits and competitive procedure protocols. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
General,
pardon me.
Oh, yep, got it.
Make sure the microphone is on, please.
Is it on?
Yes, it is. There you go.
Okay. This item is being brought to you as a result of some of the workshops that have been had lately over the three-year plan for fiscal stability. The committees have met several times, and they have some overlapping goals, and one of them, several of them, had to do with trying to streamline the purchasing and procurement process, and that's through automation or increased purchasing limits for the department heads, for the procurement of supplies, and the purchasing agent for procurement of services. And the hope is to be able to reduce the amount of staff time involved in these activities and ultimately save the county the cost of that staff and possibly be able to ultimately reduce staff to save the county money. So I do apologize in advance that I'm just going to read through my narrative and then answer any questions in the discussion.
Very good, go ahead.
First aspect is the purchasing limits, and department heads may currently make any singular purchase excluding services at a cost of no more than $1,000 without prior approval of the purchasing agent. This limit was established in 2008 when it was increased from $500. Staff is recommending increasing this limit to $2,500 for any single purchase. This action would reduce the number of purchase orders the departments are required to submit to purchasing, reducing staff time for both departments and the senior buyer administration. After submitting this, I did have our senior buyer kind of do a count of what the savings might be, and if we reduce it or increase it from 2,500 to 1,000, it's estimated that the purchase order issuance would be reduced by about 15%. Next, on the purchase of equipment, the purchase agent is currently authorized to approve purchases of equipment, supplies, or materials in the amount of $25,000 or less. Deputy purchasing agents are authorized to approve purchases of the same in the amount of $10,000 or less. Staff has no recommendations on amending the current threshold. However, the board may consider raising the thresholds to between $30,000 and $50,000. Historically, this threshold is the same as the threshold requiring a formal bid process, which will be addressed later. Regarding contractual services for agreements, that did not come out right. Contractual agreements for services. The purchasing agent is currently authorized to approve contractual agreements in the amount of $25,000 or less. This one was established in 2011 when it was increased from $7,500. The Government Code Section 25502.3 allows counties having a population of less than 200,000 and employees of purchasing agent to authorize the purchasing agent to enter into service contracts when the annual aggregate cost does not exceed $50,000. There is an allowance to adjust annually based on the California Consumer Price Index. Calculating the CPI from the date of the code in 2010, the county is able to authorize the purchasing agent up to $62,350. However, staff recommends setting a fixed amount to avoid confusion on a year-to-year basis. The authority of the purchasing agent to approve contractual agreements does not currently extend to lease rental agreements, revenue contracts, state, federal, or agency contracts, interdepartmental MOUs or contracts for public facilities or ground construction, improvement, remodel, or repair pursuant to the California Public Contract Code. An increase in the amount in the authority of the purchasing agent for contractual agreements would reduce department staff time in preparing board agenda items, as well as county council staff time in reviewing and approving the agreements as to form. This action would result in an increase in administrative and purchasing staff time for their review and approval, which we would hope would be offset by future automation opportunities or alternate contracting forms. And the purchasing protocols was initially not part of the study session, but we did add it due to some increased public interest in our protocols. So the public contract code for counties under 500,000 population mandates that a county go out to bid for work defined as a public project. This work involves the erection, improvement, and repairs to public facilities. All projects over 10,000 must be formally bid, and projects between 4,000 and 10,000 may be put out to an informal bid. Public Contract Code 20131 allows counties which employ a purchasing agent to contract for projects under 6,500 without a formal bid process. However, the county does recommend the departments obtain 2 to 3 quotes. The exception to this is for projects which the board determines there's a threat to safety or property and there's an immediate need to have the project completed. For capital expenditures, pursuant to Tehama County Code 4.24.080, capital expenditures, which are assets such as vehicles, equipment, etc., exceeding $25,000 must be formally bid and approved by Board of Supervisors unless a waiver of the formal bid process recommended by the purchasing agent and approved by the Board of Supervisors. For procurements under $25,000, the department making the purchase informally solicits quotes and makes purchases based on the best interest of their department, considering price, quality of product, quality of services, etc. Staff has no recommendation on amending the current threshold. However, the board may consider raising the threshold to between $30,000 and $50,000. Regarding services, the county is not required to competitively procure services by law. However, many of the county's funding sources require that services be procured through a formal competitive process, such as written request for proposals or request for statement of qualifications, whichever is the most important or appropriate. In reviewing other counties' recommendations on procurement of services, there really is no consistent guidance, for lack of better words, from other counties. They all handle it differently. Some don't have any threshold at all. Some have established a dollar threshold that requires the formal process on services. So I did put together a spreadsheet with all of the different thresholds of department head authority, authority for purchases of materials and supplies, and authorities for contract services. And this is mainly counties that have a similar population, but primarily it's the counties that we typically use when we're using comparable counties for, it's what we've used for negotiations and salary surveys. So at this point, we can open it up for discussion on the purchasing limits and protocols. Or if you'd like Leroy to jump in and talk about the capitalization thresholds, we could do that as well.
I have somebody waiting to make a comment behind you.
I don't believe the board should make any changes to the current ordinance due to the fact that general purchasing protocols are not being followed right now. We routinely see contracts for services and goods presented without 3 bids, even though the county supposedly encourages it. I recently saw a contract for janitorial services come through, the same firm you've used for years, which is another issue. Your very nice public works director routinely puts bids and services through using the waiver to bypass the formal bidding process. This board routinely approves contracts for services and equipment with firms previously used and routinely uses the waiver to bypass the normal bidding mechanisms. I believe we need to keep the current levels and protocols in place until they're actually followed. I end with a comment that Mr. Chamberlain professes to be concerned about the taxpayers' feelings over a $3,000 conference when this county is actively wasting thousands of dollars due to just being lazy with the current processes and limits already in place. This board is supposed to oversee county spending, so I hope you will not raise any limits or make any changes to the current processes in place. Thank you.
Comments from the board before we move on to the capital innovation special. Anybody have any comments for what David has presented so far?
Well, I do. Being new on the board, one of the things I probably need to learn, but I spent about 2.5 hours last night in my office at home rereading and rereading and rereading about all these things on here. And I don't understand why we need to raise the cost factor from Fair Words currently at. I just don't believe that it will save that much time as far as staff goes. And I'm just really not in favor of these raises. That's what I come out of with last night.
Anyone else have a comment?
I don't really have a comment, but I'm hard of hearing and I forgot my hearing aids today. And I didn't actually understand what
John
said.
Can you repeat your question, please?
Wasn't inclined to raise. I mean, there's different things on the table here. I just missed what he said. He was not inclined to.
I said last night I spent about 2 hours at home. Going over the figures and making some notes on here, circling this, circling that. And to my understanding, I don't understand why we need to raise. And so I'm opposed to raising these prices at this point.
The purchasing issues that David just discussed.
Correct.
So I had sent an email to David, but it was late in the day, and she probably was already off work when it was sent out. We're close to it. It was 4:48 p.m. So I want to say to Dana, and I don't know who else worked on this, but I can see that there was a lot of work put into this agenda item. And I really think this should have come to us as a study session rather than an ask or action item or even any type of decision at this point. I do definitely appreciate the information. It's something I don't think that we've covered since I've been here in the last 6 years. I mean, there have been little bits and pieces on that, but so I just want to say thank you for the work that you've done and putting this all together in a nice, neat little package that you did do. That being stated, I do have some questions and comments, and I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to ask the question is, how many people are hired as a purchasing agent? Does a purchasing agent refer to in the packet? Is that just Debbie?
Actually, no. The purchasing, and Supervisor Carlson and I did respond to you last night. So it was a response, the best I could do at that hour. Just to let you know, this is a study session, and we're definitely willing to have a discussion and get further direction from the board on if there's any further information that you need as far as some type of analysis on how much time and money that this would save the county if we were to raise these purchasing limits. For the agreements, there's a lot of people who are involved in submitting agenda items for the board, and it would save department staff, it would save county council staff, and I think the only department that wouldn't be on the winning end of that is administration, because it would up our workload over here. And then as far as the purchasing agent, I was appointed purchasing agent when I assumed this role. We've got, I believe, three deputy purchasing agents. One is the senior buyer, which is Debbie. We've got Grant Mesker, who's the administrative analyst, and Sean Hopi, who is the staff analyst. Is there anyone else? Just making sure I was correct on that.
So that was for the two questions, I guess, four and two. The document that she put out, and it says current on there, but I just want to be clear, that these that you listed that are deemed accounting where it says current are what they actually are right now and not what's proposed in the document here.
That's correct. That's what they are right now. So we were comparing what our limits are compared to our other comparable counties.
Okay, and so I just had a few comments, and it's really just, you know, perspective and my opinion, and my mind could be changed if there was significant reason to change these thoughts, but I don't like the reasons on it. Say to give a reason as justification that something will be easier or more convenient for staff, or that something takes time or effort to do, is not a good enough reason to make an ordinance change. I'm more interested in what benefits or costs are gained or lost by the changes. What protections, control, or authority are gained or lost by these changes? Staff time, we already pay county council for the hours that he works, and we already pay the people who have these positions, you know, full time for these. If it reduced a position, I'd be interested in that. If there was something that was a significant difference, I would be interested in that. That not just on the surface, to say something is made easier, more convenient, that's not a good enough reason to me. Waiting formal bids does seem to be a common practice here. I've seen it on a lot of agenda items. Each time it's explained away, but in my opinion, this is not only not a good practice, but it's a very bad practice. And the reason for that is that it does not benefit this county to pay money to outside firms unless there are no other options to acquire the services. This morning, Chief Minch said that it was the obligation of his, you know, to make sure that he was able to get the lowest cost for the vehicles that are being purchased. It's not only the responsibility for us to do that, however, if we do a formal bid, we might find that someone locally may be willing to match a cost or to be able to provide the same type of services or goods, and it could possibly bring costs down. Assuming that the state contract is the best price isn't always a good idea, in my opinion. It's common knowledge, or it should be, that buying local allows dollars spent to turn over in the local economy 7 to 10 times and allows increased tax revenue. So as we spend money, if we spend $100, that turns into potentially $700, but also in the tax revenue that is accompanied with that in our local economy. If we spend the dollars anywhere else, that 7 to 10 times turnover is lost, and so is the tax revenue. We talk regularly that we are looking for additional revenues. We can do that just by being calculated about how we place our contracts. And for this reason, I believe that it would be important for us to insist that every attempt be made to allow local businesses to bid on contracts for goods and services for the county. It provides greater benefit and greater opportunity for our local economy, all of our local jurisdictions, including the county. The other thing that I want to state is that the document that you prepared is a good guideline. It's good for a reference. But it's not of great relevance to me either, because those counties using, you know, are those counties using reserves to balance their budgets? This county is, or at least it was prior to COVID-19 funds coming in. And we cannot afford to be short-sighted in how we do business. I'm not in favor of increasing spending limits, because this removes any controls the Board of Supervisors might have going forward. With a critical budget situation on our hands, if anything, this board should be tightening, not loosening, and spending those spending limits, especially with regard to general fund. I will appeal to you, that is this entire board, to please consider the future and proactively be forward-thinking when it comes to items like this. We cannot afford to continue to do things the same way we've always done them if it's going to harm us in any way. Please consider every contract before us as another opportunity to bolster our own economy, create jobs locally, and create a stronger financial future.
Chair, I have a point of clarification.
What?
All the numbers that you're looking at with the authority for purchasing, that's purchasing, given that they already have an approved budget in those categories with that amount of money. Is that correct?
That's correct, if I understand.
Yeah. So it's approved budgeted money.
Yes.
It can be spent.
It's actually illegal for us to approve a...
I just want to make that point of clarification. And my point this morning was not the $3,000, but the fact that $3,000 wasn't authorized or budgeted by the Board of Supervisors.
I'd like to make one point as well. The idea of what is being presented to us today was presented early on by department heads in our departmental review ad hoc committee, out of trying to find ways to do cost savings, and the amount of time and amount of paper shuffling that has staff time that is required to go back and forth to bid on smaller items. It was a request from department heads that we take a look at that. This request did not come from Dave or Bill or anybody else. It came from the department heads just as an idea, as a way to save the county taxpayers money. So I want to make that perfectly clear.
Chair, I do have one person on the phone when you're ready for them.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Phone number ending in 1360.
1360, you're on the line.
Yes, thank you, Chairman, and the Hamer County Supervisors. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Okay, my name is Richard Marks, and I am the Northern Regional Compliance Manager for the Construction Industry Force Account Council. CSAC is a construction industry-supported nonprofit organization dedicated to public contact codes and education. Our mission is to uphold the intent of Public Contract Code 1100, which states the following objectives: to clarify the law with respect to competitive bidding requirements, to ensure full compliance with competitive bidding statutes as means of protecting the public from the misuse of public funds, and to provide all qualified bidders with a fair opportunity to enter the bidding process, thereby stimulating competition in a manner conducive to sound fiscal practices, and also to eliminate favoritism, fraud, and corruption in the awarding of public contracts. Just a month ago, I wrote to the board the concerns about the Hamlin bypassing the competitive bidding process for the $6.8 million proposed energy project, and I pointed out the information related to the contracting process should be open and as transparent as possible. Transparency ensures that the public is given opportunity to provide input and that there are checks and balances within the system. Public hearings and comment periods are important ways for the public to have a voice in the contracting process. As reported in the staff report for today's item, the county is required to competitively public its public projects with an aggregate value in excess of $4,000, and it's my opinion that the board should also be requested. CTAC always promotes the utmost transparency in bidding process in general and a level field of playing field for all contractors in California. Fair competition means a lower price and better value from licensed, bonded, and skilled contractors. I would like to thank the County of Tehama for opening up this subject for general public for discussion. Making county operation as transparent as possible enhances the public trust and confidence. I'm available if you have any questions or require additional information, and I want to concur with most of the comments by Supervisor Carlson on the subject. Thank you.
Thank you, and we are all in receipt of your email. Thank you, Russ, for sending that in.
I might clarify something on his comments.
Sure, go ahead, David.
We did receive a letter from him several weeks ago. That letter was very specific to the Aircon Energy project. What they were requesting is the county is authorized to bypass the formal bidding process according to the government code, I believe is 4217. He was requesting that we don't exercise that right and put it out to formal bid. So that letter didn't have anything to do with contesting our bidding processes. The letter that we just received yesterday, I believe the main point of that was to thank us for having this in an open discussion. Appears that one of the main focuses was to get us to formally bid out projects over $4,000 as opposed to $6,500 as allowed by the contract code. Just one more note on the CFAC. I did get on their website and just reviewed some of their information, and they have a specific section regarding piggyback purchasing where it's a common practice for public agencies to use to save money. They said it's appropriate, and the only time it's not appropriate is for labor on site or the purchase and installation of buildings or real property. And so I just wanted to point that out regarding the cooperative agreements that we sometimes opt into. One more comment about the cooperative agreements, the piggybacking, is that sometimes we do issue the purchase orders to outside of our area, but there are other times that it gives us the opportunity to negotiate with vendors that are actually within Tehama County. There's been multiple times where we put something out to formal bid, whether it's by a public project or equipment, and we're forced to take the low bid, which is not within Tehama County. So it happens both ways, where sometimes it benefits vendors within Tehama County and sometimes it doesn't.
Thank you. Any other comments before we move forward with the capitalization threshold? Seeing none, is that going to be you or is that Leroy?
Leroy is up.
Leroy's up. Very good.
So, first, if I could, just a few remarks regarding conversations that we've had so far. And Bob, I would thank you for bringing up the fact that department heads have largely driven most of this conversation. And Steve, I think it's appropriate that you also mentioned that the resources available to each department are in the approved budget. I believe what you're implying is the size of the chunk of money that they're able to spend is is what we're talking about within the confines of a budget that's already been approved. So I also appreciate that. And then Supervisor Carlson, you mentioned that time and effort were not good reasons for making a change. But if we could prove that we could reduce positions, it would be okay. I'm conflicted by these remarks because it seems that the whole basis of the strategic plan studies that are going on right now is focused on doing more with less. And I just see that conversation as leading to fewer people doing the same amount of work. And ultimately, in order for that to happen, we need to find time and effort savings, which is what we're proposing our opportunities here. So I'm just going to leave that there. I just don't understand how you...
I did say time and effort are conflicted. weren't good enough reasons.
So I'm going to speak to three subjects here. One of them didn't get into the narrative, and I apologize for that because I took part in drafting the narrative. But the chart that was up had a current fixed asset threshold of $1,500 for Tehama County. And that was set a few years ago, an increase from 750. So a few years ago, we went from 750 to 1,500. And while it's not in the narrative, part of our proposal is to raise the fixed asset threshold to $5,000. And by this fixed asset threshold, we are talking about equipment and items, not buildings and structure. So the narrative addresses a new concept for Tehama County regarding capitalization thresholds, which is intended to address buildings and structure. The county currently does not have a stated capitalization threshold for building improvements. And this can result in confusion when budgeting for and recording expenses related to certain purchases and improvements. And I think that at least three people in the room here today, Sean, Brandt, and Devo, will verify that discussions take place often about whether we are going to capitalize a certain cost or not. And this is a new concept for Tehama County, and I personally think that it would be advantageous to us. The discussion has been minimal amongst even us. There are pros and cons to it, but I know at a minimum it would eliminate a lot of confusion. And I'll just try to make up an example. So currently we're talking about upgrading the filtration system in the jail. Let's just use that. And that's going to come at a cost. So we're going to have to decide, do we consider that building maintenance, or are we going to add that cost to the value of the jail? So that's an example of the type of discussion that we have amongst ourselves and administration when we're trying to budget for and record those expenditures. Given a capitalization threshold, a lot of those discussions would be eliminated or minimized, because if the cost is less than that threshold, we don't record it as an improvement to the structure, we just record it as an expense maintenance, basically. So I'm glad this is a study session, because we, even amongst ourselves, as I said, have not put a lot of consideration into that. The $25,000 amount came out of Shasta County's ordinance. I saw it. It looked attractive to me. We discussed it briefly and included it in here. With regards to the actual fixed asset threshold for items of equipment, for instance, within our offices, computers, photocopy machines, certain pieces of furniture, the current threshold for that is $1,500. And I was involved in the establishment of that threshold. And at that time, we had a huge fixed asset inventory. If you consider anything $750 or more, I mean, we had just a huge inventory. And that's okay. But also at that time, we were looking at a major purchase being something like a computer that would cost something like $2,500 or $3,000. And I'm just going to throw this out there as an example of how things change. So computers don't cost that much anymore. We still keep track of them one way or the other. But in order for me to buy an item, me as a department head to buy an item that costs more than $1,500, well, that's a different subject of cost. It's recording it. We have to consider significance of that item. And the recording itself, the keeping track of itself, the reporting on those items is time and effort. So I have a staff person that is dedicated in part to keeping track of the fixed asset inventory, every fixed asset item countywide. We have a software program devoted to that. So what we're proposing with a raise to $5,000 is to, as we did a few years ago, eliminate all of the lower value items from that inventory, and effectively would be recording at that threshold down to things like photocopy machines. We would no longer be recording in our fixed assets, a lot of the computer equipment. We hardly ever record furniture anymore, even cubicles, since they're, you can take them apart and move them. The components don't qualify. So while it's not part of the narrative, I want to say that there is a proposal that we want to put forward. It's in the last column on the right, which should be labeled fixed asset threshold. The word capital asset should not be there, with a proposal to raise that to $5,000 from $1,500. With regard to the capitalization asset threshold, capitalization threshold, I already spoke to that. So I want to just move on to leases. Again, this is a new subject. The county currently only capitalizes items required under lease purchase agreements, government accounting standards, board statement number 87. Will require the county to capitalize all leases of 1 year or more. This standard has an extended implementation date of reporting periods ending June 30th, 2022, so it'll go into effect next fiscal year for us. It is proposed that a capitalization threshold for leases be set at $25,000 or more for reporting purposes under this new standard. In effect, we'll still keep track of leases, but to meet this reporting requirement, we will only report leases of a value of over $25,000. That threshold will eliminate the need to report leases on small items, again, such as photocopy machines. I think we're trending towards leasing machines instead of buying them. I could be wrong, but I see that. The limit reporting to larger items like cars and other major pieces of equipment, and also building leases, building rent. So those are the topics that I'm here to kind of address and discuss and bringing forward on behalf of my office, especially since we're involved in the reporting, and also because we're heavily involved in the discussions around all of these purchases, where they fall. Are they fixed assets? Are they internal assets, which is another category of items that we keep track of and budget for? So I'm open for questions, and I'm sure there are some.
So, Leroy, thank you very much, and I really appreciate your comments. I appreciate the comments Supervisor Williams made. We as the board have asked department heads how we can do things better in Tehama County. And one of the things I forgot to bring up is the number of times people have to touch paper and bring action items to the board. And an example is we have a preliminary budget which may have assets like vehicles in them that may be held till the final budget. So it's in the preliminary budget. It comes to the final budget. They've been approved to purchase the vehicle. Now they come in and they have to be approved for the specifications. Then they have to come back and get another approval to get a bid on the vehicle. And after they get the successful bid, they have to come back again and get approval to make the expenditure. And so we asked them what would help. And these are some of the ideas, not just the threshold, but the process and the number of times an item has to be set up for the board. It has to be approved by whoever in the department is writing the action item. It has to go to a supervisor. It has to go to a department head. It has to go to county council. It has to go to administration. It has to come to us. We have public comment. Some of these things, we're doing them 4 and 5 and 6 times before we ever purchase the item that was approved in the original budget process. So that's where the department head said, let us come up with some ideas. They've come up with some ideas. Now we're in the dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
That's an extremely good comments, Supervisor Chandler. I appreciate that, and I know that that is the attempt that we were making with the, at least one of the things that we were trying to do with the three ad hoc committees. And system improvement and process improvement, I'm definitely interested in seeing that. The example of the vehicle is, you know, one example that comes before this board 4 or 5 times. I would like to see that change. I don't think we do need to see it that often. But the system improvement isn't what I'm seeing here. It's an elevation of a threshold that I don't know that it benefits us. One of the things that, Leroy, what you were saying is about how we track these fixed assets or thresholds and how we track things in how you count them or how you report them. And I would like to go back to the department heads and find out if how we track them is usable as a management tool or not, because if it's not, then we need to change how we're tracking them. It's not just the threshold or whether or not it qualifies as an accounting process as a fixed asset or not. It depends on whether or not it's a usable information. If what we track in the numbers is going to be translatable as usable information to our managers who need the information. And I think right now, and this is not a criticism of you, and I don't want you to take it that way, but I think right now it's not. And part of what I was hearing in our meetings and other dialogue that I've had is that, you know, a lot of our departments have their own finance departments and things like that, because what's coming out of the controller's office is what's required from the controller's office, that it's not necessarily useful information for them as managers in their own departments. So now we have duplicative effort, and I would like to see that streamlined if it's possible. I don't even know if it's possible. I don't do your job, so I couldn't possibly know that. But I would like to hear from the department heads what it is that could benefit them, and to actually really look at the systems and the processes that we have that are currently in place that can be improved. And in that case, I would say that how often people touch something, it does matter. And it could eliminate the need for certain positions over time. but that's not what I'm seeing in front of us. I know we have to take baby steps, and I don't want to criticize too much because I really do appreciate the work that was put into this. I wouldn't have said that if I didn't mean it. But I think we need to go a little bit deeper than what we have.
Well, I welcome you to have that discussion with department heads. And whatever feedback you might find advantageous to my office, I would covet that. With regard to the inventory, fixed asset inventory, we have the departments verify that on an annual basis. So it's a tool for them to make sure that their items aren't walking away. And that, frankly, is one of the disadvantages to raising the threshold. That was a major sticking point when we went from 750 to 1500. And to that end, we incorporated a internal asset system so that the lesser value items are still recorded and within the department itself. And that information is found useful for insurance purposes. So all of the information with regard to fixed asset equipment, I think, is a useful tool for different people in both directions and different arenas. So it's how you categorize it is what we're talking about here. Yeah, I don't know how else to respond to what you said. But if you have a discussion with department heads and they find that there's something there that you think would be important for me to know, please let me know. And thank you again, Steve. These study sessions that we've been having, you know, I've met with each of the three groups at some point in time. And I've also met separately. Well, I met once, Krista on my behalf met one other time with a smaller group to discuss these issues that are on the table today. And those discussions involved the purchasing department, administrative representatives, county council, not necessarily the same person at every meeting, but what really prompted this to come forward was the 3 to 5 year strategic plan meetings that Steve has mentioned. And Bob has mentioned, and I'll mention it again. We think this is an opportune time to look at this, consider this, and it matches exactly what those groups are talking about. Aside from that, I have a personal need as the auditor controller to have a leasing threshold in place for reporting purposes by next year. So that is something that even if the rest of this stuff goes away, I will be pursuing because we just absolutely need to do that.
Before Krista steps up there, I wanted to chime in on kind of the same thing that Supervisor Shamlin chimed in on, but he was talking about vehicles, which are larger than the $1,500 threshold. But one of our very first meetings of the departmental review ad hoc, I believe it was, in fact, I'm almost 100% sure that it was our chief probation officer that spoke to the time that it takes and the staff time that's required to make a purchase in their department that was over $1,500. And it can be $1,501, and a staff member needs something. They go talk to their supervisor, their immediate supervisor. They say, "I need this." Because that supervisor approves it. That supervisor carries it on to the department head. The department head approves it. They forward it over to administration and purchasing for approval. It goes back to the department for placement on the agenda. It comes back to county council and admin for review again. Then it goes to the clerk of the board and gets posted on the agenda. Then it comes to the board of supervisors.
And there's more than that because my office is involved too. So once a purchase order is approved, we get a copy of it and keep it on file. So every time an expense is accounted against that purchase order, we record it to make sure that it doesn't get exceeded, and once it's fulfilled, then we file it. So you're not even covering the whole iceberg there.
I'm trying, Eric.
Yeah, well, let me tell you. So another note I have here, and it's been brought up, and actually I made a commitment to Burley that I would try to attempt to quantify some of those costs. And I spoke briefly with Jennifer last week about trying to do that, to say, what does it cost? For instance, for a purchase order, just, I'm doing the cost plan right now, so just historically, the cost of a purchase order just to the purchasing department is anywhere between $37 and $80 some, depending on what year it is, what the staffing levels there are, how much time they spend on them, how many there are, etc. So that's just one element of the litany that you, the incomplete litany that you just described. Starting to analyze what's the cost of putting something on the board agenda, I'm kind of devoted to that, but I think by the time it's done, I will have spent more time trying to figure it out than it costs to do this stuff. So it doesn't hurt to have data and information, but that comes at a cost too. I mean, just this conversation we're having here today, it's a high-level conversation, and the build-up to it was a high-level build-up. The ad hoc committee meetings that were preliminary to this discussion, and we're throwing thousands and thousands of dollars at a thing that says, let's just go from 1,500 to 5,000. In my mind, it's ridiculous, but it was determined at one of our meetings that we should have a study session rather than just implement. So here we are. Isn't this fun?
And I just wanted to, you know, basically I was going to say very similar to what Bob brought up already, and that was, you know, the savings, and you mentioned $1,500, well, it's $1,000, and that's one of the reasons they wanted to increase the department head's authority, because then it also has another step, you know, in addition to that. But I just wanted to clarify that one of the reasons for increasing the threshold is that a lot of the things that we're capitalizing are electronic devices that don't last the 5 years that the life of the asset as it is. So that's one of the things, is this is the $5,000 limit is really to capture a lot of the computers and things that we're purchasing now that barely make the 5 year mark. So, you know, we're capitalizing these things that don't have a 5 year life. The other thing is that, I lost my train of thought. anyway, basically that, and there is a paper, you know, I do want to also emphasize that even if we increase the threshold for our fixed assets, that doesn't mean that things are lost and that there's going to necessarily be a lot of staff time. There is less paperwork involved if we don't have to do a form for everything that exceeds the $1,500 mark. But departments are still required to track those items. So we require from departments annually a verification of all their fixed assets that we track in our office that's currently $1,500 and above. And they also have to give us a listing of all internal assets, which is anything that is less. And we have criteria for those things, of things that should be tagged, things that are easy to walk away. So we you know, have them tag certain things. We have, you know, policy in our office for different thresholds, even within the $1,500 mark as it is right now. But they are responsible for signing off on that also, and giving us that report every year. So the raising from 1,500 to 5,000 would just change the reporting requirements of it. The department would have the onus on it, and would send it to our department for filing. And the anything over 5,000 we would send out. So that's basically. I just wanted to let you know that really the part of the idea of increasing the threshold is the federal limit is $5,000, so we would never want to exceed that, because if we're receiving federal grants, we never want to exceed what the federal government allows. So the $5,000 is the federal limit, and you know, that was all we proposed, was to potentially bring it up to that $5,000 limit.
think a lot of things, you know, I don't think we'd ever want to go higher than that and lose, you know, big, big ticket items. So I just wanted to clarify that.
So everything that is tagged as an asset, it gets a birth certificate.
Right.
When we dispose of it, we have to come formally for a death certificate.
Back to the death certificate.
So if we can avoid a birth certificate, we can avoid a death certificate.
Correct. So one more step in the paper trail.
Thank you.
And I know this is not one of the issues, but we're talking about, you know, streamlining the position, the things. And one of the things you mentioned is all the different times that, what have you mentioned, all the different times that something goes to board. Grants is another thing. So I know that's not on the topic right now, but we go to board, they go to board, I don't know, 6 or 7 times for a grant. So, you know, maybe that could be the next study session.
And I really appreciate all the information, and I don't know how much, you know, 15% reduction in process is, how much that is quantified in money, but, and I don't know how much it costs for us to find out, but it is a little bit abstract without some, you know, lower number and higher number to consider. Because I don't even know how many items we have a year. We have an average of 35 items a week that we meet, mm-hmm. and we meet 35 times a year.
At least, yeah.
40. And so 15% of that, and how much per item, I guess we could probably figure it out that way without too much trouble.
So, yeah, I think the 15% reduction was just relative to purchase orders.
Just alone. Purchase orders alone, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Lot to think about.
So, and I think, just to simplify a little bit, what Kristen was talking about is inventory. And, you know, no matter what we do, we still have to keep track of the things that we have. You know, even pens don't belong to us. They belong, if they're purchased by the county, they belong to the county, should remain with the county. But, you know, inventory, it doesn't really matter to me if you're counting it as an asset, a fixed asset, or if you're counting it as something else, as long as it's accounted for and counted. But would I still...
Well, with regard to that, you know, I don't believe we're technically required to keep track of those items, but we are committed to doing that as a county. I mean, we have directives. I have given out directives in a memo form to departments that Krista alluded to, you know, with certain items, and we name examples within this value parameter, keep them on an internal list. And it's not just good business sense, but, and I don't know if it came in handy or not, but I'll use an example when the child support building burned out. It's like, what was in there? Well, if you only kept track of the fixed asset items, you would lose a lot of the calculators on the desk, the screens for your computer towers. What are some of the items we ask them to keep track of? Desktop printers, you know, these types of things that actually don't qualify for our inventory list. We know they're there, but if somebody doesn't actually keep track of them, then they weren't there. So that's just an example of why we encourage departments to actually keep those lists and keep them active. There's really no enforcement mechanism in that, but we get fairly good cooperation.
I still think that what Steve said is the key to what I'm looking for anyway, and I can't speak for the rest of the board members, but what Supervisor Williams explained with so many people touching, you know, the process, that, you know, why? You know, we need to ask why, and if there's not a good enough reason, then we need to look at how to streamline that.
Well, that's the motivating factor. You know, his example was, why does that department head have to go through all of that, those motions to make a routine purchase? Well, it's because we have a low limit for what their spending authority is. And that goes back to the first point that David was speaking to as far as spending, department head spending authority. And that's really, that comes up repeatedly, and Dick is actually quite a driving factor in that realm. But he's not alone.
But still, the description that he made, if that's accurate, and I think it is, what Supervisor Williams said, I think what he said is very accurate. That does not seem reasonable to me. And it does seem to me like that could be looked at. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's a process, and that's a system that either we've accepted and no one has questioned, but now it is being questioned. And I think that there is going to be a significant savings if we do look at that.
Yeah, so that's purchasing limits, first paragraph, first page of the agenda item is basically the biggest step towards solving that.
You see, you're going back to the limit, and I don't know that that's the issue. I think it's more of the process.
The limit drives the process.
Well, the number of people who touch it...
touch it if the limit was higher.
So, as a department head, can I comment?
Yes.
Okay, so to give an example, I recently purchased 3 laptops with COVID grant money. I had to get a bid for the 3 laptops. I had to send that to purchasing. They reviewed it to make sure they couldn't get a cheaper bid, like through Dell. Then they approved the purchasing order. It came back to me. I had to do a claim. I sent that to the auditors for approval and payment. I now have to do A100s because the laptops with the software are over $1,500 a piece. Then I also have to put them on my fixed asset inventory list, which, as Leroy stated, has to be maintained by their one of their staff members, and I have to report on it every year. And then at the end of it, when I dispose of them, I have to do an A100 to dispose of them. It comes before the board for disposal. So if we raise those limits to 5,000, I would only have to do a claim. I would have to put it on my miscellaneous inventory list, and I would report that annually to the auditor. So those are one of the differences.
Good job,
Jay. You cut the process in half.
Yep.
Well, the other side of the coin that we have to maintain is the internal asset files that departments keep. We went through this a number of years ago, Leroy, when we changed from, 250 to 500, when all the sheriff's guns became non...
They were no longer fixed assets.
Right, they were no longer fixed assets.
Right, and I remember going over to the sheriff's department to ascertain their control system and how they kept inventory on those items, and tasers, I think, fall in potentially in that category.
Radios.
So,
and we'll have the same issue if we raise the threshold today, or at least move forward with it for some items, such as the laptop, that they're going to have internal controls to maintain.
Which are already in place.
Which are in place because of the process that we have today.
Right.
I personally want to thank Dava for the excellent work in regards to the report, and Dava and Leroy and your input. Long term, I think this is the first step to that 3-year plan to get some type of reduction. It's similar, and I have to keep going back to, Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, but 2012 when we went to IQM2. Prior to IQM2, today we have 263 pages of agenda items. That would have meant that between Richard and I, we would have had a ream of paper sitting between us and another ream over there and so forth. So it took us a year for everybody to become a little bit comfortable with IQM2 and supporting the process. I think this is a step toward that, and I support what has been recommended for it to come back for formal action, in my opinion. So.
Well, with that example, within the last month, we had one meeting where we would have had a ream and a half sitting in front of each and every person at the dais. It was so big I had to get a thumb drive because it wouldn't work on my iPad. So, yes, we've made, and I really want to say, not only the process and the product you brought, I have really been overwhelmed with the good-natured response and hard work of all the department heads to really, you know, dig down and say, what can we do to assure the public that we're doing this properly, but change our process so that we can give quality service without doing so much busy work. And so I'm really, not just the folks here today, and thank you, Leroy and David, but all of the department heads have eagerly met, taken time from other duties they're doing to try to make this better. So thank you so much.
I just wanted to add to what Dennis mentioned about, you know, the internal tracking, and what Steve has mentioned about the budget process. So two things to keep in mind as well, if you raise the threshold for the fixed assets or the inventory, they get budgeted in 53800, which is a service and supply budget. They don't have to wait until final. It gets approved in the preliminary budget, and right, the departments are able to purchase computers and small items like right, that without waiting until October.
Thank
so,
you.
Just another
for
an increase.
So
I just want to clarify that.
Thank you all. David, do you have anything else?
Leroy wants to know, what are we supposed to do now?
That was my question. That's my question.
Yeah, I would just ask for both A and B, if we could get some direction regarding, on A, if the board would like us to do any further investigations on as far as time savings, cost savings, or if this is, you know, dead on arrival, or if there's one, you know, like say the department head authority that you would like to entertain, and then same question on B regarding the fixed asset threshold, lease threshold, and capitalization threshold.
So my question regarding the presentation today, there is nothing that was discussed today or possibly recommended for action that would be contrary to any state or federal guidelines.
No.
You have not exceeded any state or federal guidelines on reporting. So our current ordinances and process are more stringent than state and federal guidelines. Correct?
It, with regard to my office, far more.
Okay, thank you. I'm satisfied. I would like to move forward in whatever fashion the board would like.
With regard to my issues, and there are three, although only two were stated in the narrative. One is increasing the fixed asset threshold, and we're talking about, let's just say, office equipment, those types of things, from 1,500 to 5,000. The other, which is very important to me, and I'm potentially we could bring these forward individually, but I think our goal was to incorporate them all into an ordinance. But regardless of that, I need to establish a lease threshold. So unless there's an objection to that, I'm going to bring that forward in one fashion or the other. With regard to the capitalization threshold, as it applies to buildings and improvements, I'm on the fence with that with you guys, but I have to emphasize that I really would like two things: the fixed asset increase from 1,500 to 5,000, and a lease threshold of $25,000 in writing somewhere. And that's my.
My personal opinion is to follow your staff recommendation, and I would look forward to whatever you can bring forward to us in an ordinance or resolution to get that accomplished on both items. This is not an action item, so it's going to be a consensus or direction.
Right. I would agree, Mr. Chairman, your assessment there.
John, got a comment? Well, I probably know more right now than I did when I started today. I don't have a problem, Leroy, with the $25,000 release limit. We do have some questions about raising it from $1,500 to $5,000.
I believe that there's a supervisor orientation plan for you. Maybe it's even started. I know I'm an element of that, and I would encourage you to make an appointment with me, unless administration is scheduling us separately, and I'd be happy to discuss all of this stuff in more detail than is probably necessary or possible right here. Okay. Happily, all of these issues.
I'm open to that.
So could that orientation happen with Supervisor Leach before you bring something to us and do that in the next 30 days?
Easily.
Thank you.
Yes, it's been on our radar. We got seriously derailed by COVID.
Sure. Like,
very common these days.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's just, for me, I think the quicker I can get up to speed with what's going on, the better off it'll be for the county and for the board. And so there are some areas. I know I talked with Bill, talking with him, and being new, I'm not new to a lot of things, but I am to what's happening here. And so I really need to get up to speed as soon as possible.
You're definitely new to our process. Kenny?
Well, Jennifer was pretty darn convincing on the system, so I have to admit that. And especially since she does it, I can see how that could make a big difference. I am not sure about the change from $1,500 to $5,000. I think I'd be a little more comfortable with maybe $3,000 or something. It's because it is a significant change, not so much that it's not a good idea. Maybe we could change it again at a later date to the $5,000. But I still, you know, my statement that I made earlier stands. Just saving time is not good enough, and you have given other reasons, so I appreciate that. And I know that there was, you know, a lot of work done here, but like I said, changing the threshold number to save staff time, if there is a benefit, as was mentioned by Jennifer in that process, then I'm all for it. If there isn't a benefit in that sense, then I don't like the idea of this board giving away authority, especially in a time when we are in a budget situation, at least going forward without one-time monies, where we're going to probably have to make cuts. And, you know, if we're not able to track what we're spending, I don't know how this board is going to be able to make decisions about where we make cuts. So I think it's really important. You know, we put a lot, and I do want to make this statement, we put an awful lot of responsibility on the shoulders of the department heads. And in some senses, I think it belongs there to some degree, but not 100%. And I want to be careful that we're not putting our entire responsibility that's not the responsibility of the department heads on their shoulders. So I just want to move forward with caution. That's all.
As a department head, I appreciate those remarks, and you do. You hire or contract with people and give them responsibility. And I'm going to go back to a comment that Steve made very early on. You've allocated these department heads a certain amount of money in actually in categories, in quite detailed categories. And they have that money now vested in their control to spend as they deem appropriate. So whether they spend that in $10 increments or $1,000 increments, or $20,000 increments, you've already given them that appropriation by constraining them in the size of the authority. You're just, it's just complicating matters.
I just think that we need to speak.
They already have the authority to spend that money.
And I think that's appropriate that they have that authority. What I think is also important is that we are able to see where the money goes, so that if it does come down to some hard decisions being made, that we will have the appropriate documentation in front of us to be able to make those hard choices, because that's going to fall on our shoulders. So that's, you know, I just want to make sure that's clear. And then also, there's a lot of transfers that happen in the departments, not every department, but a lot of the departments, and I would like to see a lot less of that if, you know, we're going to be allowing more leeway in these things, and less is coming to the board. That's all I have to say.
I tend to believe that one will lead to the other. I think you'll solve that problem in this process also. And I agree with you wholeheartedly, because we're heavily involved in transfers in our office. It's a huge, time-consuming endeavor. And for the board, for administration, for administrative review of the agenda review, and for our office and the departments, I would like to eliminate as many of those as possible. And I think this may help. Some of these steps may help.
Very good. Comment? Go ahead.
Just on that last one. I've noted, as I look at the agendas and we look at transfers, so many of them are related to grants coming in. Mm-hmm. And so the sheriff is saying, I'm going to take money from a asset seizure account, and I'm going to dole so much out to Corning and so much out to Red Bluff. There's only one way to do that. That's transfers. So not every transfer is colored the same way. A lot of these transfers are due to money that was unanticipated, revenue that was unanticipated being spread out, or a separate committee that meets and says, here's how we want to dole out these dollars. And then we have to come to you and say, this has been agreed to by a multi-agency committee. This is how we're going to have to transfer the dollars.
Well, personally, I'd like to see those on consent.
That?
I really would.
Yeah.
Once they've been approved by another body.
They've already been approved by
another body. They've already
been approved. Like COPs, the Citizens for
the COPs funding?
Yeah.
That could all go, in my opinion, that could all go on consent.
So many of those grants come through a consortium.
Yeah.
If it happens to be that the Tama County Sheriff is the lead, then he's the one that has to make all the transfers.
Mm-hmm.
And the county has to process those transfers. But the money was always going to go to Corning and Red Bluff and Tehama and the county. It's just a process of where we're tracking it. Yeah. And I would think that the majority of the county departments would find state and federal agencies and grants a lot more ominous in tracking and reporting back than anything that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That was always my experience, having federal grants and state grants and other things in education and health services, is that it was the state agencies that I lost all my hair over. It wasn't the county or the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you all. We look forward to the next rendition.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll stand adjourned. Jennifer, you've got a moment for Richard and I, and then you know how to go our separate ways.
Thank you for your job.
Yeah, that wasn't moving.
It wasn't?
Mm-mm. Oh.